Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Isn't that right, Dr. Judy Jasek?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's, you know, there's very few absolutes that I speak in, but that's the one absolute that I tell every single one of my clients. Don't feed kibble. Like, we'll figure, like, they might be a little nervous about jumping right into raw. Like, okay, well, let's figure out something else for a transition that you're comfortable with, because I want people to be comfortable with what we're doing or they won't do it. But the most important thing is to stop feeding kibble, all of them. I don't care if it's got grains or grain-free or sprouted or ferments, whatever the marketing claims are, just don't feed kibble.
Well, people always say, is there any science? Is there any science about raw feeding? And actually, there is. There is one example. I believe the author's name is Mogens Eliasson. It's M-O-G-E-N-S Eliasson in his book, Raw Food for Dogs. And in that book, he quotes a major Australian study on natural feeding. And he claims that dogs fed on a natural diet develop strong immune systems that will cause your vet bills to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And even he explains that Australian kennels that switched from feeding kibble to raw food experienced a significant reduction in their vet bills by 85%. So there's a lot of other research out there. There's some research in Finland, in the UK. So there is research that has been done. But look, for thousands of years, you guys, dogs were fed a species appropriate diet, which is raw meat, raw bones, you know, some raw vegetables. And then came kibble, right? Then came kibble not that long ago. And then, Dr. Jasek, what did we see the rise of after kibble, for God's sake?
All kinds of diseases, cancer included. You know, I mean, and kibble, you know, a lot of people probably don't realize kibble was created during World War II as a temporary thing, because there were so many shortages because of the war, and people were feeding themselves. So they wanted to feed their dogs. So they came up with this idea, well, let's take some bunch of waste products and turn them into, you know, these kibble dry foods and feed them to dogs. And at least we can keep our pets alive. And then when the war is ended, we'll go back to feeding them what we're feeding them before, which was what? Fresh food, table scraps. That's what dogs were fed before kibble. Well, then the food industry discovered, hey, people are feeding this and it's convenient and it's cheap to produce and we can make a whole grundle of money. So they just kept doing it. But it was never designed to be a lifelong diet for pets. It was just meant to be a temporary thing. And what did pet, I mean, people ask about research. Well, what were pets eating? So this is just, kibble's just been around for the last, you know, 80 years or so. Well, what were pets eating before that? You've got hundreds of years of evidence that pets can survive not eating these commercial diets. So to me, that's plenty of evidence. And you know, the research thing, doing really good research is very, very expensive. And the only companies that really have that kind of funding are the big corporations that make the dry food diets. So you're not likely to see a lot of research about the benefits of raw feeding, because the companies that promote that and make the raw foods, they just don't have that, you know, that kind of income to do the research, but we have years of evidence. I mean, I look at my patients and how much, I mean, all the time I hear people, you know, oh my gosh, my dog just loves that raw food and they're doing so much better and their coat's good and they got energy and, you know, their symptoms are going away. I mean, I hear that over and over and over and over again. So I don't need to read a research study to tell me that this is benefiting my patients. I see it day in and day out. And the truth about research too is most of it is bogus. It's not done well, because research studies can be slanted to produce whatever outcome they want. And oftentimes that's what's done. So just because there's a research study, it doesn't mean that it's accurate or that it's actually good information.
Well, I think that is totally evident. If you follow some people that actually do real studies, all right, like the Weston Price Group, mm-hmm. and you guys, I would seriously point you in that direction, the Weston Price Group. And what is their website is called WestonAPrice.org. WestonAPrice.org. I've watched many, and I know that you have too, Dr. Jasek, Dr. Thomas Cowan and Dr. Andy mm-hmm. Kaufman's videos, and they're talking about what the COVID thing, right? And this is so interesting because they're saying people want to say that a virus, any virus, has been isolated. And they said, but it really hasn't. When you look at the way that they supposedly isolate a virus after they've taken so-called fluids and they run it through a centrifuge, that should be the isolation process, and they should look at it and maybe take that and inject that into a human, inject that to a dog, see if somebody gets sick. But what they do is they take that and they lay that on, you know, kidney or monkey kidney cells. They add dyes to it. And actually what they're doing is that they're killing the actual bacteria that's there. And this killing of it, bacteria changes into a long tubular thing called a virus to protect itself. And then they go, oh, look, there's the virus. It's a little more complicated than that. I made it very, very short. But when you listen to them explain it, and you're just like, okay, so that's what we're saying a virus is. And then we're going to make a test that has a bunch of holes in it. And when they talk about this, they're talking about the test, how we test for this particular virus, is that we really don't know all of the sequences. So we just have the computers fill in the sequences to get to that result. It's mm-hmm. the craziest thing you have ever heard. And it makes perfect sense. And they have done these test after test after test. And the way they explain it just will blow your mind. And I think what I've gathered from really looking at their stuff is that here's what we do in society. There's a narrative, and we run with that narrative, and we never stop to question, was that narrative ever even valid?
Right. Right. It's just this blind belief in what we've been taught. And I'll tell you, I mean, I've listened to like them talk about this, you know, that viruses don't exist. And the first time I heard it was like, wow. I mean, it was really hard for me to get my head around it at first, because that's what we've been taught in medicine, these viruses, all the vaccines that, you know, are all, you know, designed supposedly to prevent getting sick from what? Viruses, viruses, viruses. And then you listen to them talk, and yeah, but they're not really, really isolating viruses. And even things like measles and smallpox and polio and some of these other diseases that supposedly like vaccines just saved the world. When you really dig in, it's never really been proven that these things exist. So then I ask the question, okay, so are these supposed viruses fabricated to sell vaccines? This wouldn't surprise me a bit, you know, that's more what's going on, because follow the money, right?
Right. And so here's what they talk about. They talk about that what a doctor's job, a vet's job is, and this is what you do, is to distinguish between the therapy and the illness. Okay. Distinguish between the therapy and the illness. So they explain it this way. They say, if you get a splinter in your finger, And then your body makes pus to get the splinter out. Is the pus the therapy or is it the disease?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So most people would go, oh my gosh, I've got pus. I've got an infection. I've got to go do something to get rid of that infection.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look, we do know that pus indicates infection and that the presence of, it has the presence of microorganisms. But in medical school, they say, okay, well, the doctors, you need to kill the pus.
Right.
And they say, but the pus is actually the therapy for the splinter, because if you don't take the splinter out, the pus is going to do it for you.
Right. Well, and what's in that pus? You put it under a microscope, it's white blood cells. It's exactly what you said. It's the body coming in there to eliminate the splinter and manage any bacteria that might be growing. It's a foreign body. Body recognizes that there's a foreign body. So what happens? Yeah, it festers up and you get this pus. That pus is actually kind of like dead white blood cells, but it's because the body is just pouring the white blood cells and all these defenses into that area to help clean up any bacteria and expel that splinter. Because then what happens? The area festers up and it breaks open and it drains and whatever's in there comes out. Done deal. And you know what? That'll happen without antibiotics, believe it or not. You don't have to use them. And I think a lot of times things heal, not because of antibiotics, but in spite of them. And the antibiotics are still damaging the body and they aren't necessarily helping to resolve the condition.
Yeah. I mean, they say if you think that the pus is the disease, or the doctor thinks that the pus is the disease, and you destroy the pus, you know, with antibiotics, that sort of thing. Look, the splinter is going to stay in your body and it's going to attempt that process again. Mm-hmm. So if you destroy the pus, your body's going to repeat this process. And then what do you have? You have a chronic infection that the body keeps trying to remove. And either it's going to succeed, or it says that the body will encapsulate the splinter, which will become a tumor.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And right, not a cancerous tumor, but a benign cyst. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking at this, Dr. Jasek, I was thinking about all of these little cysts that people come in and want to remove on these dogs. And I'm thinking, you know, was this a way that the body was trying to expel something that was there and it kept getting pushed down and pushed down and pushed down? I don't know. That was a question I was going to ask you. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, as you know, I am not a big proponent of removing every little lump or bump that pops up. I don't even really like to stick needles in them and do aspirates anymore because I think it makes them worse. And regardless of what it is. So I do think, yes, it could be the body trying to detox or encapsulate toxins. I think that's probably what lipomas are. Like you see these older dogs that just have these fatty lumps all over their body. Well, fat accumulates toxins. And we see this mostly in dogs that have been eating kibble diets and over vaccinated. And I think the body is doing that to encapsulate toxins. And when we get pets on better diets, oftentimes those will shrink because the body's able to detoxify and we get rid of a lot of that fat. You know, the processed carbohydrate diets just are fat builders. You know, the body just turns all of those processed carbs into fat. And so we get this, you know, fat layer. And when you get them on off of those processed carbs, you usually lose a lot of that fat. The body just, because we're not manufacturing, or they're not manufacturing the fat anymore because they're not eating the processed carbs. So a lot of times these lumps will go away, but I think that's because they're not malignancies. You know, it's like, why do dogs get these fatty tumors all over their body? And that's what I think. And if we do have something that ends up being malignant, that's still not the problem. Like you talked about, okay, is the pus the disease? I don't think the tumors are the disease either, even if it's a malignancy. It's the tip of the iceberg. It's a sign that we have serious imbalances in the body. And we need to be addressing those, not just focusing on making the tumor go away. Because I think people get this false sense of security in, okay, my dog had this lump, went in, got surgery, got it removed, it's gone. Well, if that's, even if that's cancerous, that cancer is not gone. A cancer is in the body. And if you're not addressing things that could have contributed to that or caused that in the pet's body, it's just going to pop up. We see this all the time. People go in, get a lump removed, either regrows at the same spot or pops up somewhere else, especially if we're not addressing these other issues that might be contributing to that, which conventional medicine doesn't, you know, as we've talked about. They don't address nutrition or other things to support the body. They have surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. So I think you have to really look at, like you were saying, what's really the cause of what's showing up? Is what's showing up really the disease? Or is that the, you know, the main thing we need to be focused on? Or is there, you know, deeper levels in the body that we need to be addressing, or we're just going to get more lumps? And I see that all the time, over and over and over and over again. I tell people, if we got just a small lump, mast cells, classic for this, you know, these little cutaneous mast cells, you know, they can be just itty bitty little lumps. Just leave them there and focus on the diet, focus on getting, you know, improving the pet's immune system and stop doing inflammatory things like vaccinations. And a lot of times the body will manage those just fine. But if all we're focused on is removing what we can see there on the surface, we're not doing anything to really treat the underlying condition. And it's just going to keep coming back.
Yeah. And if you look at how these type of doctors live and what they do with their own pets, they're feeding a species appropriate diet. They understand their whole premise. When you look at homeopathic practitioners, holistic practitioners, and not everyone is as deep, you know, or maybe as educated as another one. But when you look at Cowan and when you look at Kaufman, constantly they say what we say. Don't poison the body with bad food. Don't poison the body with bad water. Don't poison the body with toxins. Okay, these three basic things right there. Eat real food. And Dr. Cowan all the time will say, look, if you have to read a label, don't eat it, right?
Yeah.
And so this is something that they really talk about. And they're very... He really has a big thing on water, and he really talks about water, which if you look at raw pet food, it's 70% moisture. Look how much moisture is in there. And that is so great for the body. There's a whole, you know, thing that he talks about water, how important it is to the body. And when we are dehydrated and we starve ourselves, that's when we really get in trouble. That's when the body starts trying to detoxify. And, you know, I've had this cold going on. All right. And I would say, Dr. Jasek, if it were the main street narrative, I would have COVID. Right. Because I'm doing all the same things that anybody with the flu would have done. But my mind doesn't work like that. And I don't believe that we've ever isolated a virus. I don't believe that the tests are valid. And so I don't even go down that path. And when I look at what Dr. Cowan and Kaufman talk about, they're like, look, they prefer to say cough, fever, mucus, rather than bronchitis. Because the word bronchitis, they say, separates you from the reality of the situation. And your body is producing mucus pus fever in order to cleanse your lungs of said splinters, like what we were talking about with the splinter in the finger. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is the body's natural response to detox. And I think when we look at dogs and we've just got this, you know, 1 or 2 days of diarrhea, we've talked about that. or we've got a little cough going on in a dog or something like this. The body knows how to rid itself of things. And that is vomiting, diarrhea, coughing, sneezing, and fever. And the chills, they're going to be talking about that. And for some reason, well, not for some reason, for a big marketing reason, we believe that we've got to stop this process. Stop the coughing. No fever. And let me tell you something. We've talked about the fever is a great thing to have. Would you not agree with that, no. Dr. JC?
Yeah, absolutely. Fever is a natural way for the body to, number one, kind of cook the pathogens, because pathogens, if you do have bacteria or something in your body, they are going to thrive at normal body temperature. And so you're making an unfriendly environment for them to grow, but also as you heat the body, so the immune system, there's many, many reactions that take place in the immune system. And as the temperature goes up, it actually activates enzymes and some of the cellular responses in the immune system. So it actually supports immune function, actually enhances immune system function. And this is part of why, for cancer patients, one of my therapies is mistletoe. Mistletoe generates heat in the body, and pets will even run a slight fever sometimes. And a slight fever is actually good, because that hyperthermia is raising the body temperature. You know, we're not talking a dangerously high fever, but just bump, or one that's like debilitating to the pet, you know, just wipes them out. But just a little bit of a rise in temperature actually helps stimulate the immune system. And that's why mistletoe is immunomodulating, which means it doesn't suppress the immune system like things like chemo do, but it also doesn't overactivate it to, like vaccines would do. It kind of helps normalize it and helps it to do its job better. So, you know, that fever, it's a little uncomfortable. Well, what's it doing? Like, it's telling you, again, maybe you just need to go rest for a few days. You know, maybe your body's got some stuff it's got to deal with, and you need to just, you know, back off, rest, honor your body, and drink lots and lots of fluids, and let your body do its thing. Your body knows how to heal. And I think we just intervene, and by suppressing, you know, again, the fever is not the disease. That, you know, people want to suppress the fever because it's uncomfortable and they want to keep going on and doing their thing. And you're suppressing the body's natural immune system. And whatever's going on that your body is trying to resolve is just going to get worse if you keep doing that, taking these, you know, over-the-counter, you know, cold medicines. I've heard so many people over the years say, oh, they're taking their kids in for vaccine. So what does the doctor tell them? We'll give them some Tylenol first in case they run a little fever. Like, they'd be way better off just letting their body try to handle whatever they're giving them rather than suppressing that. So yeah, fevers have a lot of benefit. And when that shows up in the body, even the chills too, you know, chills are what happen as your body is trying to build that temperature. You're like contracting all your, all your muscles, and it's miserable. I mean, I hate that when that happens, where you're just shivering and you can't stop shivering and you can't get warm. That's your body getting, you know, kind of getting the temperature up, and you're so much better off if you just let that process run its course.
Yeah. I know that people say that high fevers are going to cause brain damage. Okay. And I was doing some study on fevers, because a couple of years ago, you know, Asta, our 13-year-old now, had 105 for a dog. Mm-hmm. That's pretty high, mm-hmm. but their natural temperature is right around 102. Right. So it's not, that would be like right. us having what, 103 or something like that, 104 maybe. But here's what it said. They all know that fevers in humans, okay, that are upwards of 108 are the ones that are going to cause brain damage. But they say most commonly those type of fevers occur because of an environmental factor, like a child being left in a hot car, and not because of an infection.
Right.
Okay. So we are conditioned to believe that the body is not as smart as we know it to be. And dogs' bodies are also smart. And so it says, the reality is that our body's not going to let our temperature get so high that it cannot survive unless it's put into a situation like a hot car or something like that. So I think that we have to be careful not to let the narratives that are out there scare us into doing crazy things, right? So the dog has a little bit of fever. The dog has a little bit of diarrhea. Do you really need to get on metronidazole, or do you just not need to let the dog get out of its system, whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes, Dr. Jasek, it's just because it's an inconvenience for the pet parents, right? They're like, I don't want my dogs pooping all over the house. I get that. But would you rather have your animal get rid of whatever is ailing them and their immune system be boosted for that? Or do you want to suppress it so it goes deep into the body and then we have to try to get it out again?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's worse and chronic illness arises. See, this is the mindset. We just are in a box. We have been led into this box. And trust me, they don't want us coming out of the box.
Mm-mm. No, because they're in the business and they're, you know, meaning the conventional medical practitioners and the big pharma that trains the medical practitioners. They're trained to be pill pushers. And I've actually heard this from veterinarians that they believe that a client will not feel like they have been well served if they go into a clinic and do not walk out with a prescription of something. And so there's this mentality. And I think a lot of people are like, well, my dog has diarrhea. I just got to do something. Well, sometimes doing less is better. Let's fast them. Let's fast them for 12 hours. Maybe give them a little bone broth. Just let the gut rest. Because usually, I mean, dogs eat all kinds of stuff. I mean, people, you think you're watching your dog around the clock. You're not. I mean, come on. The dogs pick up stuff all the time. They're sniffing around. They're, you know, even out in your yard, they're picking up stuff. And they need to, if they pick up something that doesn't agree with their body, they need to get it out of there. So just let the body rest and get out what they need to get out. And then it'll heal. You know, fasting is a way of allowing the gut to rest and heal. If you pull a muscle, you're going to not use that muscle for a few days, right? And let it rest and heal. If you can't really rest the gut if you're continuing to feed them, because the gut has to work to digest the food. So if you want to heal the intestines, sometimes that, you know, 12 or even 24 hour fast, perfectly fine, as long as they're drinking, they're getting hydration. That just allows it to rest and heal. When you keep, and I've seen this so many times, dogs that go in for repeated bouts of diarrhea, and every time they're put on metronidazole, and pretty soon the metronidazole isn't working, and it's really hard to get those dogs' guts to heal because they've been so hammered by the antibiotics. So instead of feeling that you have to give your dog something, maybe doing less, and know that the veterinarian, you go in the ER, they have the mindset that you're not going to be happy unless you walk out of their clinic with a bottle of pills. So don't go in with that mindset, or, you know, don't go in at all. Just fast your dog for 12 hours and see what happens. You know, don't go rushing into the ER for every little thing, because you're going to come out with 1, 2, 3 bottles of pills that are likely to just make your dog sicker in the long run.
Yeah. And you have a great article on Dogs Naturally. It's called Treating Cancer in Dogs, a Holistic Approach. This is where you do talk about ozone. You talk about mistletoe here. What's been the response, Dr. Jasek, for pet parents that come to you, right? Maybe they've never gone down the holistic path. Do you find that 50% stay on the holistic path? Do they go back to the traditional approach? What's been your experience with helping people get out of this box we're talking about?
Well, I think
And I've never done those exact, run those exact statistics, but I think most people that have come in to see me are already moving outside the box. That's why they come in to see, to see us to begin with. Now I do get some people that, and this probably isn't the majority, probably 10% or less of people that come in that just can't let go of the conventional side. And at some point we just have to say, look, we can't do both. If you're going to be doing chemo and all these medications and they're making your pet sick, we can't help if you're going to continue to poison your pet. Now we do combination therapy. So we do have clients that do chemo, do conventional, we do holistic support, and it can work in some pets. Just sometimes there's a point where people, and I can just tell it is a mindset thing. Like we talk about, like some people are just truly on board with both and they just want to do both. They want to do this integrative approach. They believe kind of in both sides of the coin, so to speak. And so we'll work with them. I mean, I always give it a try because I want to help the pets. We definitely have more success for people that say, no, we're just not doing the conventional route. So I would say the majority of the people that come in to see us, probably 70%, are really, really wanting a holistic route. But usually it's because they've had bad experiences in conventional medicine, either for themselves or people in their family or other pets that have died. And they'll come in and say, yeah, I'm not going down that road again. Like, I just want to do things holistically. I want to keep my pet comfortable. And then, you know, we jump in, and those are the pets that we have the best results with. People that are hesitant, and, you know, the belief and the energy that the humans are putting into the situation, I think has a huge impact on pets. If, you know, people are coming in because they kind of like the idea of this holistic stuff, but they really don't believe in it, we don't have good success in those cases. You know, the pets pick up on that. And I go, mom doesn't think this is going to work, so it probably isn't. You know, pets know that. They pick up on your energy. If you fully believe in the course of treatment that you're doing and you can really let go of the conventional side, the pets are going to respond a whole lot better. Pets pick up on fear and anxiety big time in their people. And, you know, I know it's easier said than done when your pet's sick to not be afraid and not be anxious about it. But is to whatever extent you're able to do that, it really does benefit the pets, because I see the differences. I actually were working with a cancer patient as osteosarcoma. So it's a bone cancer, you know, severe, potentially aggressive cancer. And we're doing, or, you know, kind of regular holistic treatments that we would do. And she's been measuring the tumor on this dog's leg, and it's getting smaller. She started tracking it because she's like, I think it's getting smaller, but I need to start measuring it. And these people are just, they're concerned about their pet, but they let their pet go out and be a dog and live its life. They don't put him in a glass house. They're not consumed with fear. They fully believe in the holistic. They're like, no way on earth are they doing conventional. That's not appropriate for their pet. And the pets know that. They know that. There's just a difference in the attitude. So as much as you can let go of the fear and the anxiety and the negativity, just that energy will help your pet tremendously. And it's free. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to pay for anything. Just sit and chill and try to, you know, train yourself to think positive. You say, Dee Dee, snap out of it.
Wake up, stand up, and snap out of it.
That's right. Get the new year off to a good start. You're tired of all this negativity and fear.
You know, it is so true. You know, it is difficult to take control of your mind. And again, when you look at the pets and you say, oh my gosh, I love my pet so much. And it's, you know, what am I going to do without them? We're already the pet. You're already thinking about what you're going to do and how you're going to deal with the pet when it's gone, when it's still sitting right there in front of you.
Right. Yeah, right.
So, yeah. I mean, it is very difficult. And that, again, going back to being present, be with your dog. And, you know, Dr. Jacek, I think there's very few things in life that we cannot deal with. We may not want to deal with it, right? There's, you know, we don't want to deal with uncomfortable or painful situations, but that doesn't mean you can't deal with it. You can. And your life will be different. It will be changed, but you can make it through. You can deal with it if you keep taking another step and another step and another step. Right, we've heard of horrific situations in the world. You know, Neely, who had a wreck and lost two of his dogs, you know, right then, boom, just gone. You can deal with the hardships in life. You can deal with the heartache. I think it's our resistance to wanting to deal with it, because nobody wants to deal with it, but there's no way out than through.
Right, right, right. And you have to, you know, I saw, I can't remember who I was listening. It might've actually been Tom Cohen, one of his things that I listened to, but he said one of the worst things that has happened, especially to our kids, are the cell phones. I think it was him, because he said kids don't spend time using their imagination or contemplating, just going inside themselves and learning. You know, like when I look back when I was a kid, now, you know, I'm old enough where I grew up with a phone that was attached to the wall with like a 25 foot cord. There was not even cordless phones, you know, and it had a dial on it too. Didn't even have buttons. So when I went to go out to go play with my friends, we invented games. We'd play, and we were like playing doggy, like one would be a dog and one would play the dog and one would play the person. And, you know, you had toys and you made up things and you used your imagination, but all of that ability to use your imagination. And I think secondary to that is develop your intuition. And I think that's what people really lost touch with, is their intuition. They're just so bombarded with information that you have to quiet your mind in order to allow your intuition to kick in. You have to get off of your screens and spend some time. You know, for me, it's getting out into nature, because I mean, my house, I mean, surrounded by screens and computers. I mean, yeah, we all are dependent on them these days, but when I go hiking, there's no phone, there's no nothing. It's just, you know, me and usually Chris and just out in nature. And to me, that's like the most valuable thing I do for my health every week. Pretty much we get out, because I just think you need that separation. You need to be able to tune inward. And I think we've lost the ability. And then that makes you susceptible to being programmed to the information that they are putting out there. You know, I'm reading Robert F. Kennedy's book on Fauci.
I got it too. What? Scary, but
you know, are you reading it?
Oh yeah, I'm reading it.
Yeah. That's a pretty big book, but it makes me so mad. I mean, because this goes, I mean, I know quite a bit of stuff. I mean, I've heard a lot of stuff, but this goes even deeper. And what I'm reading about now is actually what was going on when AIDS came out, and how kind of what a big lie all the information that came out about AIDS in the 80s, which I really wasn't aware of. I was in school. I wasn't even really watching TV or anything. I was young and just doing my thing. But one thing that I heard in that book that really struck me, and it really makes the things that are going on now makes a lot of sense, is that what Fauci did during that era is he captured the narrative. So basically he started punishing scientists and doctors that spoke out against his narrative, because he had enough connections by that time, and he had enough control over the funding for research to take down anybody that challenged his narrative. So he captured the narrative, and that's why he's been able to do so many evil things because he will take down people that that challenge him. And it basically says in the book, that was the moment that true science went away back in the 80s. And I'm like, wow, like that makes a lot of sense in terms of how did we get to where we are today? Well, it started way back then. And that's how it happened, is that he captured the narrative. And it's the same thing in veterinary medicine. As you know, I look at, you know, conventional veterinarians that are so closed-minded and so in the box, why won't they even entertain the possibility of another treatment possibility when, you know, pets are getting more and more cancer and more of them are dying? Does it not make sense that maybe we need to do something different here? Like, to me, that's just logical. We need to be looking for other things, but nope, just the narrative is literally bought. It's bought. And these corporations own the narrative. They own the media. They own the news. You know, we even got a flyer from the AVMA, American Veterinary Medical Association, telling us veterinarians that we're supposed to be convincing our clients to get the COVID shot.
What?
Like, that's not our job. Oh, yeah. Because it came in the mail. Chris is like, are they saying that you should give these to pets? I'm thinking, no, I think they're telling us that we should be telling our clients that they should be getting, they're telling us to give our clients personal medical. We're not licensed to practice medicine on people. To me, that like is actually going against our licensing, but that's how strong the narrative is, because that's the popular narrative. So, you know, you can go ahead and, you know, go ahead and do it because that's what everybody else is doing. That's the mainstream narrative. That's what they want people doing now, is going out and getting this shot. And if you're a veterinarian, it's perfectly acceptable for you to tell your human clients to do that. You're basically giving your human clients medical advice, which we should not be doing because they're not licensed to practice medicine on people, but because that's the narrative, it's okay. And so the narrative is owned. So the information that you're getting out there in mainstream is bought and paid for. It's such a corrupt system. It just makes me sick. We need a new medical paradigm. And I'm really, you know, Andrew Kaufman is working on this to create new opportunities for practitioners to, you know, build clinics. There's a lot of practitioners on the human side, and I hope to God this happens on the veterinary side, that are just fed up with the mainstream narrative and what's going on in the hospitals. They're not treating people appropriately. And I don't think there's enough veterinarians waking up to that, what's going on in veterinary medicine, to do that yet. But I really hope it happens, because that's really what we need. We need a new medical paradigm. Actually, it's an old paradigm. It's about natural healing and letting the body heal and getting out of the way. The way I look at medicine these days is we just need to get out of the way. We just keep intervening and making things worse. And if we get out of the way and just support the body naturally, it's going to know what to do. And that's the paradigm we need to go back to. But, you know, it's not selling medications. It's not selling vaccines. So, you know, it's not profitable for the people, you know, that control the narrative.
No. And those folks that aren't in this industry of raw dog food, do not see what we see in regards to the labeling laws and how they align themselves with the FDA's requirements and all this kind of stuff. I mean, we had to take and I was going to look and see if I had the exact thing here, but we had to take off of our website the sentence behind heart, that heart has X, X, and X, what the good thing about a heart is, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll see if I can find this. But basically what the Colorado labeling said, you can't make that kind of statement that it's good for a dog, because that is a health statement, and only the FDA can make that statement. Now, it was so vague. Oh, here's what it was. The claim that beef hearts boost stamina and performance is a drug claim. Only the FDA approved materials, such as medications, are allowed to make such claims because animal food only supplies sustenance and nutrition. Please remove this.
Wow.
They are up our crawl all the time. And yet you and I have done many podcasts on the prescription pet foods and the crap that the FDA allows to go through. And yet you got to take it off. If it says it boosts stamina, nope, that is a medical claim. You can't say that.
Oh, that's just so ridiculous. Because it's not a medical claim. It's a nutritional claim.
Right. And so they also said that the labeling, so you've got like your Colorado labeling, your Texas labeling, that they're now starting to really align with the FDA. And I'm like, what is going on? In this environment, have we not seen these three-letter agencies are so corrupt?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's just one little pain in my, splinter in my sphincter, that I'm getting. Can you imagine, like, Dr. Mercola, all these people who've talked about vitamin D, who have talked about sunshine, that can't say it. They're being absolutely taken down. Their ability to make money is being thwarted because the FDA wants to maintain control. Sure, you can have those dyes. Yes, you can have those myotoxins and aflatoxins and carcinogens. They're FDA approved.
Right. Or what is that generally regarded as safe or something like that? There's like a list. And if you ever look at that list, I think it's GRAS is the acronym, but generally regarded as safe, like very vague. And you look on that list, and these are like things that the FDA allows to be put in food products, both pet and human, and all kinds of toxic chemicals on there. And they just decide, no, it's generally regarded as safe. We can't prove that nobody's ever proven that this certain substance causes disease. So we're just going to regard it as safe, but they haven't really looked into it, but they just, there's no, basically no information that they would choose to acknowledge. And so they just decide that, it's probably safe. It's just ridiculous. The regulations are so, so loose. And, people and I know you do too, Dee Dee, I feel this question all the time. Well, how do I know this diet's complete? It's real food. You don't have a list of how many IUs of each ingredient, because there's not a bunch of synthetic vitamins and minerals and God knows what else in there that, that your pet may not be able to digest and assimilate anyway.
When I really look at the people that have been in this business for a while, people like Honey's Real Dog Food out in the UK, they have this, they talk about balanced meals are fine for humans, but not for dogs. And they're saying, in the wild, a healthy dog, they may not eat for up to a week at a time. And when they come across an ingredient that their bodies tell them that they need to eat in order to stay healthy, like grass that has useful trace ingredients and minerals in it, they just eat it. Dogs get the nutrition they require over time. And this is called balance over time approach. Now, I agree that our dogs aren't out there hunting on their own. So we have to be smart and say, if I'm giving my dogs one protein or two proteins, maybe they do need more. Maybe they do need some phytoplankton, some green-lipped mussel oils, some turkey tail, something like that. Maybe they need some variety. They don't need it in every meal. But again, this dog down the street, Dr. Jasek, and I just did it again. I said, all right, let's try turkey. Let's try chicken. Let's try pork and let's try rabbit. No, not gonna have it. This dog will only eat beef. Damn, this dog will only eat beef. So what do? We do Green Rover. We do Red Rover for, you know, grasses, antioxidants. I said, do some green lipped muscle. Here's, you know, phytoplankton. You're going to probably have to add some stuff in because this dog won't eat anything but beef.
Oh, snaps.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.